The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And now we step into Agribusiness Innovations with Mr. Jody White. Good morning to you, Jody.
Morning, Tosca, Trinidad. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Agribusiness Innovation, of course, only found here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Today, I have a guest that is going to talk to us about his business in microgreens. Now, I have an idea of what it is, but I am not very knowledgeable of it. So, Mr. Stephen Lucio Francis of Ibis Farms, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. Excited to be on the show.
So, Stephen, let's start off. Tell us a little bit about yourself personally. Well, professionally, I should say.
I currently work in supply chain and have a strong background in it. And I'm actually a third-generation farmer. My grandfather actually used to have a large garden in Paramin, where he would have planted his normal scythe, lettuce, basil, etc., those type of varieties. And that actually kind of spurred my interest into farming. I also have a lot of family members who are into it. And it really did help, at least in from a young age, help develop an interest into farming, into gardening, and really learning how connected we humans are with our food sources and the world around us.
So what then made you get into this field of microgreens?
Well, Jody, funnily enough, I always wanted to get into farming, but I never had the time for it. So when the pandemic hit in 2020, I found myself working from home and a lot of spare time. I had access to some land, but because the land was so far from me, it made it a challenge to actually get into traditional farming methods. So my now wife actually suggested that I get into more indoor or more innovative farming methods that will allow me to spend less time working and more time producing, if that makes sense. So by and large, making more productive crops. And thereby, I was able to do some research into microgreens, which has a smaller footprint in terms of how much space is necessary to grow it, as well as it has a pretty fast turnaround time, in about 2 weeks to a month for most varieties, which actually allowed me to get pretty hands-on information pretty quickly from it.
So what exactly is a microgreen then?
All right. So a microgreen is pretty literally a stage of a crop. So when a crop or when a plant grows, you can see it grows through multiple phases. So first you have the seed phase, then you have the germination phase, and then it goes right into a sprout slash microgreen phase. Now, people would say, aren't microgreens sprouts? And to be quite honest, you can say yes, because microgreens more specifically refers to the stage of which a plant is harvested. So for example, broccoli, a broccoli plant would grow about 2 inches. And now it can grow into the larger broccoli that we are familiar with. But at a microgreens level, you harvest it at about 2 weeks, which is about 2 inches. And actually at that stage, plants are their most nutritious simply because during the growth, the life cycle of a plant, it expends most of its energy throughout that youthful stage.
Now, how would we then eat a microgreen?
Okay, well, to be honest, you can eat it in salads, you can cook with it, you can pretty much use it in the way of any leafy green or herb. So for example, I actually grow a basil. You can cook with that basil. I actually put that basil on my burgers. I can make pesto with it. You can pretty much get innovative with it. I also grow wheatgrass, which, as you know, could be used for a variety of health applications that people use for juicing. They save it for powders. They use it for a variety of things. You could pretty much do anything that you will with normal leafy greens with microgreens.
No. I went onto your Facebook page and I saw some sort of a snapshot with a screen that says temperature, humidity, VPD. How much technology then has to be involved in growing something like this?
At a minimum, you need humidity and temperature controls in Trinidad and Tobago, simply because our climate is not the most favorable for a crop this sensitive. Now, just to give a little context, microgreens can be grown in any temperature and in any humidity. But what happens then is that they aren't at their optimum stage. So what I do, I grow indoors. So I control my temperature, I control my humidity, and the VPD kind of refers to the percentage between the humidity and the temperature. But basically by doing that, what I do or what I get is a crop that is very tasty, right? And actually, Jody, I could send some samples across for you to enjoy. Very tasty and very nutritious. So for example, if I grow during the rainy period, as we're in now, what we'll see is that there's a lot of humidity right now in Trinidad, where the humidity levels could reach about 86%, which means that there's a lot of moisture in the air. Microgreens actually prefer around 50%, so drier air, which is quicker found in temperate regions. Because we can't really have that in Trinidad, you kind of use your climate or you use your indoor climate to manipulate the plant to grow in its optimum condition.
So then in your system, you have to have some sort of technology that would remove the humidity if necessary.
Correct. So I would have dehumidifiers. I have, well, AC, of course. You must have your air circulation because now the microgreens, they're pretty small. So that means a lot of seeds in a very small container. So you need to have a lot of air circulation to reduce your chances of mold, damping off, crop failure.
Now, how did Trinidad respond to the availability of microgreens?
Pretty good, actually. For one, hotels have been using it for quite some time externally. So the chefs in those restaurants were pretty much interested in the fact that there's a new player in the leafy green market that is able to raise the profile of their restaurants and also provide a pretty robust and unique taste that is not commonly found in Trinidad and Tobago. That's one. And two, within some of my smaller clients, they actually found that they were able to be pack leaders because they now added something that people watched as a luxury product to their own products. And in doing so, they were able to kind of expand their reach of it.
How long have you been in this market?
4 years only, Jody.
Okay. So what would you say has been your biggest accomplishment since?
Well, actually, last year I was the recipient of an award from Unitrust, the Yourpreneur Grant, which was one of my major accomplishments. Beyond that, I would say being able to get consistent sales, particularly as a farmer, and not be seasonal. So, Jody, as I'm sure you're aware, one of the challenges that farmers face, particularly when selling to corporate clients, is being able to be consistent regularly, right? Because microgreens are pretty much grown indoors and my farming model is a bit more climate resistant, I am able to pretty much show that, hey, I am consistent, I am regular, I have a good product. And that pretty much is one of my biggest accomplishments, because you don't really have, one, a lot of people growing microgreens in Trinidad, and two, remaining consistent. And by doing so, providing a diverse selection of products, I feel like, you know, that has been like a huge win for us.
Great. Now, you grow many different varieties of microgreens that I heard. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to know is, how do you select the varieties to grow?
Okay, well, first I look at our palate in Trinidad. Now, we kind of like spicy food here, right? So one of the primary varieties that I have is daikon radish, which sort of tastes like watercress. So it's pretty spicy. You bite into it to get a kick. In addition to that, I also have foods that go well with Asian cuisine. So that's sunflower and snow pea shoots, which kind of taste peanutty and provide like a sweet, nutty taste that is unfamiliar with unfamiliar with the type of food that we are accustomed eating. So it kind of pairs well with it. And then, of course, you have basil, which goes well with a variety of foods, and broccoli, cabbage. These items are pretty much sweet, but more used for garnish. In addition to that, I'm pretty much going to start growing more like micro herbs as well. So think of like leek. You can also get thyme. There's a lot of it in the microgreen industry that you can get into here.
But is this something where you set it, you could keep cutting and it regrows? Or is this something where every time you harvest, you have to replant from seeds?
It depends on the variety, to be honest, Jody. For example, the only variety that I think, or the only varieties that regrow, are pea shoots, wheatgrass, and sunflower. But you really don't want to do that, because what happens is when you cut, sometimes there are dead plants within the harvested tree. And when you regrow, there are instances of mold, or the plant doesn't grow as good as it should. It's pretty much thinner. Yeah, I in my opinion, I kind of stick to the first cut only, simply because I provide a fresher product with it, or a better product with it.
No, you seem to have to learn this entire process on your own. How did you learn about how to grow this thing in the first place?
I would say the University of YouTube, man. Well, as I said, with the pandemic, I had a lot of time on my hands. So as a result of that, I would have spent 3-4 hours a day first learning how to grow it. And then I started very, very small. Think one shelf in one one shelf here in one room downstairs. So I didn't have any sort of major investment at first. And that pretty much allowed me to learn, as well as make a lot of mistakes. One of the good things about microgreens compared to a lot of other crops, particularly in indoor applications, is its short life cycle provides a really high chance at learning and making mistakes. So one of the first mistakes I learned was that humidity has a really huge impact on how microgreens can be grown. If it's too humid, what happens is, besides the mold and damping off, the microgreens are kind of leggy. They don't really stand up straight. But the drier it is, the cooler it is, the microgreens tend to react positively. They taste better. They're a little more turgid. And that contributes to all-around better product.
It sounds that there would have been some sort of a learning curve. What would you say has been or have been some of your major challenges? And I want to know how you would have overcome them.
Okay, well, first, as you would expect with any farm, your first problem is capital. And I pretty much would have had to bootstrap everything. So that is, I would have had to buy my own things out of pocket, you know, get everything done myself, through friends and family, of course. So that is like your main problem, number one. The next problem that you really want to focus on, especially with any type of indoor application, is knowing which crops are the best for your market. So, for example, I won't want to grow iceberg lettuce indoors, because lettuce or iceberg lettuce is pretty much a scale product. You only make a lot of money when it's on a large scale. With indoor farms, I think it's best to focus on products that have a higher rate of return, so you can at least see some money in some ways, right? In addition to some of the challenges I would have faced, it also took me a time to master some of the products I grow. So for example, sunflower, which as I mentioned is a bit of the nutty taste, that one I had a really large challenge in getting the seed hulls to actually fall off. Now, in order to kind of overcome that, I actually had to spend a few hours researching. And one of the ways that I targeted is I added about like a cupful of food grade hydrogen peroxide to the sunflower solution. So let me get a bit nerdy here. In order to germinate sunflower, you actually have to soak the seed for about 12 hours, right? And what I would do is I would add food grade hydrogen peroxide to that solution, which will then allow for the seed hulls to pretty much fall off. Before, what I would have had to do was individually pick off each seed hull, which, as you can imagine, gets really tiresome, right? And one of my last challenges, I would say, is really trying to make a name for myself as a small business. I would say that while there are businesses or while there are corporate clients that are pretty much aware of your product and are willing to buy, you have to spend a lot of time learning your market, learning what they're willing to pay, and dealing with what sales is. So you have to cold email, deal with rejection, move on from that. All of these are some of the challenges that any agripreneur will face at any phase of their growth.
It seems as well that you had to make an investment into this. How were you able to finance the setup?
In the first instances, as I said, it was family and friends. So I actually would have had to take a few small loans just to get some things purchased or purchase things very in very example. One of the things that I do is I import my own seeds. I found that importing your own seeds allows for a lot of control over what you grow, when you grow, how you grow. But the cost to ship seeds to Trinidad is costly, but not so much because of the import duties, of which there aren't any, but more so because of the freight and phytosanitary certificates to get it into Trinidad. That's where your cost kind of adds up. So I pretty much would have had to finance that myself until my last grant funding from Unit Trust, which kind of allowed me to accelerate how much I was able to buy, expand a bit, and take it from there.
No, I saw on your website as well that you mentioned that the farm is moving in a direction of sustainability.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about some of the activities that you are in or would like to get in with respect to the farm that increases the sustainability of your operations.
All right. So one of the things that helped me understand sustainable solutions was actually a Ministry of Agriculture sponsored certificate, right, where they where they taught on organic farming. One of the major things coming out of that was that organic doesn't specify a product, but it's more like a cycle, right? So I took that very profound. And from that, what I was able to do is, like, for example, my medium, which is cocoa peat, right? After it's used, it's pretty much biological material, broken down biological material in a moist cocoa peat. A lot of people are pretty much interested in that product. So I give away or sell that product to other farmers who then use it to help in the nutrition of their plants or even help with water retention with their plants. Another thing that I actually want to do is move to more sustainable packaging. So that's like glass or even plastic bowls that I send to clients. They wash and return it to me, and I package in that only. Therefore, I use less packaging or less individual packaging for my items.
Do your customers appreciate the step towards sustainability and actually request some of these changes?
Yes, definitely. I actually had a customer who challenged me on that, and that's where the thought came from. They basically didn't want any plastic at all. They actually preferred shipping in brown bags. But what I quickly realized is that when you ship in the brown bags, it's still too susceptible to the external climate. So you can end up with a wilted product. So I actually started sending that client plastic bowls, which then helped solve the problem.
Actually, had a guest on the show previously, and they would have done some sort of composting, and they experimented with also putting it in brown bags. And then what they realized was that the compost was so filled with organic material and good bacteria, it started actually digesting the brown bag itself and turning the outside packaging into compost.
That's fine.
Now, what about the use of energy and energy-related matters? Have you had to do any adjustments on the system to actually be able to save on, like, electricity costs?
Well, because microgreens, let me start over. I can use LED lights for the growth of microgreens. And if I'm not mistaken, one shelf costs about $11 per month to produce about 4 pounds of microgreens, which for me, that's about like 20 or so packages. So when it comes to energy, because prices or the electricity is so low, and even when the rates are going to increase, it's not going to be significant. Plus the fact that I use LED lights and cooling fans and no really significant lighting systems, I am pretty much not really hampered by too much of the negative impacts of overusing electricity. But that is something that is on my mind. I would think that the biggest way to really solve consumption is to transfer to solar, but that's pretty costly and pretty much a long-term affair.
Now, are you noticing any changes in terms of market trends or the demands for microgreens? Because I think it's still in its relatively infancy stage locally.
Yeah, definitely, and definitely agree. It is in its infancy stage, which actually kind of works out well for the current suppliers of microgreens, and which is actually one of the reasons why I got into that crop first. The market for microgreens is both young and undersaturated. Therefore, whoever enters the market is pretty much entering like a, I don't want to say an empty race, but it's definitely not going to be as crowded as the romaine lettuce, as the kale markets, as those leafy greens that pretty much dominate what already exists. What we're doing here is pretty much pioneering, and this actually goes for all the producers of microgreens. We're actually pioneering a product in our local market as well as the Caribbean market. A lot of chefs are now pretty much adopting the Western or European and American food trends. So they actually starting to demand and request microgreens more. They actually asking for varieties that are a little more unique. I actually had a hotel ask me to produce something that is called red vein sorrel. It's incredibly difficult to grow, but it's such a vibrant color. It tastes like lemon. It adds a bit of zest to bakery treats. So people are aware, people are definitely interested, and the market definitely has responded in a way that they are willing to accept it within the current leafy green market.
Would you say then that most of your customers are businesses, or would you have some of your items in retail spaces?
I sell B2B, although if a customer walks up to me and asks for microgreens, I have no problem selling to them. A lot of people actually are interested in it primarily for the health benefits. So for example, I had someone ask me for broccoli because they saw somewhere that broccoli is really good for your skin and your eyes, and they want to start juicing with it. So I said, sure, no problem. I'm going to send broccoli to you. You enjoy it. You tell me how you like it. People also like wheatgrass. Now, what happens with wheatgrass locally is a lot of people have the powder. I actually have the wheatgrass itself, which is, of course, more nutritious, fresher, and a better product overall.
All right. Now, I want to jump into a quick commercial break. And when we get back, I want to talk about your business itself and the future goals. So stay tuned. We're going to get into that shortly.
Buy and sell anything on ads.tt. It's quick, simple, and free. Follow the three easy steps. Install ads.tt mobile app on your mobile device. Take pictures of your items, then fill in the description and set the price. Your ad is then posted on ads.tt and you'll begin to receive inquiries. Trusted, safe, and reliable. Use the mobile app or our website for your convenience. Download ads.tt today. Buy or sell anything with ads.tt. Available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store.
The best buys and best savings are at JDA Supermarkets. Rosemont Chicken Vienna Sausages, 4 for $19.99. Swiss Hot and Spicy Barbecue Sauce, 750 ml, 2 for $19.99. Cold Cafe 3-in-1 Coffee, 90 gram, 2 for $19.99. Happy Macaroni, 400 gram, 4 for $19.99. Blue Band Margarine, 227 gram, 2 for $20.99. Swiss Pasta Cuts, 4 for $19.99. Grace Peanut Punch, 250 ml, 4 for $20.99. Soft and Pretty Toilet Tissue, 12 count, $19.99. And so much more. Specials valid until 11th August 2024. JDA Supermarkets, where your total bill always costs less.
And now we return to Agribusiness Innovations.
Now, tell us a little bit about what a typical day would look like for you in this business.
Well, actually, we spend about 2 or 3 hours a day, and that's actually more labor-intensive side for the microgreens business. What I primarily have to do is water, which I use about 250 milliliters of water per tray per day. And multiply by the total number of trays that producing, I would say I spend about 30 minutes to an hour watering on that specific day. And then on a harvest day, that will, of course, be one of the more labor-intensive days. That may be like about 2-3 hours, maybe 4, depending on the load that week. And, of course, the same applies to the actual planting. And then lastly, you have your cleaning and sanitation. As you could imagine, with indoor farming, you pretty much have to keep a very clean scene. Now, there's actually a point to note. There aren't many regulations on what indoor farming should look like in Trinidad and Tobago. So I had to borrow a lot of outside influence on sanitation. So, for example, I have to clean my my racks every week. I have to wipe down surfaces. Every tray should be washed with a bleach solution, of course, not very strong. These are the kind of things that you have to do to pretty much stay ahead of the game here.
Now, based on that then, how do you see the industry as a whole evolving over the next few years?
Well, I definitely can't see more people getting into the microgreens business, right? As I would have mentioned, it's a short-term crop, very short-term crop. So it's a really good way at getting cash in hand fast. The only problem is microgreens is, it requires a very consistent and methodological approach to getting it correct every single time. It's fairly easy to grow if you get your conditions correct, but you need to be correct every single time. The market will definitely respond positively to it, as they have been. But for anyone entering into the space, you definitely have to be very aware that what you're producing can go wrong very quickly.
So then how do you see your future plans for expanding it or scaling this business?
Okay, so one of the things, or a few of the things I want to get into, is I want to actually start going farmers markets more, connect with more people, get more people eating it, because it's a very healthy product, as I mentioned. In addition to that, one of my products that I want to expand into is edible flowers. That has a very high demand in Trinidad. It also can be grown indoors and also can be grown within a similar setup as microgreens. It's, of course, there's a bit more infrastructure, but that's nothing too difficult to get into. Going further, it kind of lines up pretty well with microgreens. Longer term, I definitely look at some varieties of tomatoes and some varieties of mushrooms, as well as products that I would like to get into.
Now, then, have you ever experimented with non-traditional types of microgreens?
When you say non-traditional?
Something that is not very commonly seen.
I am actually going to start growing something called amaranth. Now, are you familiar with that plant, Judy?
It's a grain, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a?
A grain?
Yeah, it is. And actually, it produces, or it has pretty vibrant, when it's mature stage, it has pretty vibrant red leaves and stuff, right? That is not something that I think we cook with in Trinidad. I really don't think I have heard many people eat that. So that is one of the varieties that I want to bring to the market as a more exotic type. That, and as well as beet. Now, we are, of course, familiar with beet, but the market has not seen what a microgreen beet looks like, right? And Of course, those two are pretty much difficult to grow, but I embrace the challenge. Part of farming is really getting into challenges, learning from mistakes, taking it one step at a time.
No. How do you stay updated on some of the new trends or innovations that happen in the microgreen space?
On LinkedIn, I actually follow a lot of foreign farms. So one of the farms that I draw a lot of inspiration from is Scintilla Farms, I believe is the name, and Urban Micro Garden, both located in Canada. They actually show how far you can take this microgreens business to, you know. They pretty much grow, I think, like 50 or so varieties of microgreens. So they grow pretty much large scale. They operate on like 10,000 square feet of space, which is a lot of microgreens, because people hearing this may be like, okay, 10,000 square feet is not a lot of space for a farm. But again, with indoor farming applications, particularly with the Wigilla, right, which means that we grow shelves, so we grow vertically, we are pretty much able to use a lot of space. And by drawing inspiration from those folks, we are able to also grow the more exotic varieties. That actually, those pages are actually where I got inspiration on how to grow the beet and the amaranth, as well as pea and sunflower.
Okay. Now, when it comes to microgreens, which are the types that you would say would give the most health benefits?
Broccoli for sure. That one is, I think, vitamin K, A, D. Then you also have wheatgrass would be the most nutritious, although that is not a microgreen per se, that's more like a grass. That would be the most prominent ones. I think beyond that, you may also get varieties of radish. But I would definitely rank broccoli as number one, followed by wheatgrass number two in terms of health benefits.
Have you specifically come up with any unique form of manufacturing, growing, something that you would consider proprietary?
I don't think so, to be honest. I could walk you through my process and maybe you could identify it sometime, but I don't think that I have anything revolutionary in terms of how I grow. I mean, I hand water because I like to pretty much manage exactly how much water goes into it. My lights, LED lights, as I mentioned, I use a mineral solution fertilizer. So it's not like one of those heavily chemical ones. This is literally minerals from the ocean that is then crystallized, and it's in a water. It almost looks like water, to be quite honest. I don't think there's anything too revolutionary. More so the act of growing indoors in controlled environment agriculture. That may be the innovative part of it within Trinidad, within the Caribbean.
Quite interesting. Would you say then that you have excess demand for your products right now? Or would you say that the market still has to develop a little bit more and then you'd feel more confident in expanding?
I think the market would definitely have to develop a bit more. As of now, it sticks mostly to people who are aware of the product and are willing to spend for it. So, for example, microgreens are a bit on the costly side. We retail one of our 30 gram packages for $25, which for most people, they may be like, why would I pay $25 for this? But there are people, or there are chefs, there are businesses who would watch that and be like, yeah, we like this, we want this, because it adds that edge to their foods. However, I will say that there are also individual customers. They see it. They may not be fully aware of what it is, but they taste it, they like it, and they also have the money to spend, so they purchase it.
You're telling me 30 grams. I'm not too sure how to gauge 30 grams.
You ever see one of those small cake boxes from Massey?
Yeah.
It's pretty much like that.
And how much how much of a microgreen then would I use in a serving then if I'm incorporating it into a meal?
Pretty much use like a pinch, like when you pick it up. So 30 grams, it sounds again very small, right? But when you take a pinch and you add to a meal here and there, it stretches pretty far.
What was the shelf life of it?
Pretty much 2 weeks. I say 2 weeks. Some of my customers say they get up to a month. I say 2 weeks just to be safe.
Now, for people who are not very familiar with microgreens but are open, how do you communicate the value of microgreens to potential consumers?
Well, first of all, I start off by sending them free samples. And from there, without even discussing price, they are like blown away at the taste. They're blown away at how long it lasts on the shelf, as I mentioned. And they also like that it has a variety of food applications. It goes well with curries, stew, burgers, soups, etc. And then after, they're like, okay, how much does this go for? I tell them the price. And in many cases, they're like, okay, cool, I like it, let's buy it. In some cases, of course, there would be people who may be like, well, there's another option that's cheaper, to which I say, sure, that's no problem. Of course, everyone is fair. This is a free market. Everyone is fair to find their products elsewhere. But by really standing on our quality, that's really how I sell it. You know, I let people taste it first, use it first, and then we talk price.
So what is the biggest financial challenge or some of the financial challenges that you face within the microgreen business?
You definitely need a lot of upfront infrastructure costs. Microgreens can be grown in a greenhouse format or modular, as I mentioned, so shells. But either of those would need, you need money to buy your fans, your climate controls, your racks. In my case, I use shelving racks, so you have to have money to buy those. Or for people who grow it in greenhouses, they may have those farming tables. Those things cost a lot of money. So for example, I believe one of my racks is around $5,000 for one when it's completely outfitted.
Wow. Okay. Now then, what about getting paid from buyers and having to offer credit in some situations? Is that a problem, or does that not happen in your line?
No, I offer a 30-day credit term. I found especially with corporate clients, they pretty much amenable to the fact that they have such a flexible flexible payment schedule. I think as an agripreneur, you definitely, especially in the small phase like we are, you definitely need to be flexible with how much time you're willing to give some of these bigger players to pay you, as well as being cognizant of the fact that cash flow, you need to be very aware of cash flow. You know, things can go wrong very quickly with any farming application. So just like staying ahead, offering people, but at the same time too, having those customers that pay on time. So like, it's like you have like a healthy mix. So customers that pay regularly on time, as well as customers who have the longer payment terms that allow for a bit of flexibility.
Okay. Now, are you currently pursuing any partnerships or collaborations to grow your business?
Yes, I am. But some of that I may have to keep a bit low-key. I am, however, open to any other partnerships if anyone is interested, of course, to at least know what microgreens is and taste the product that we offer.
Have there been any surprising or unexpected learning moments in this journey of microgreens or entrepreneurship as a whole?
Yeah, one of the, I think, biggest things for me was trying to be competitive with price while also not sacrificing what I value the product as. So as you can imagine, Judy, price is something that as any entrepreneur, you need to be very acutely aware of. You can't charge too high, you can't charge too low. Right? You have to find the just right spot. Now, I believe we found our just right spot, but navigating the space, especially in a field that is pretty young and pretty much the market has to be educated on, there's a lot of challenges in getting people to understand why my price might be the price it is, right? But of course, there are people who are much more amenable to it. They taste it. They like particular things that we offer and they go ahead and they say, yeah, we like that. I would say one of my biggest learning from the market on price or just entrepreneurship on the whole is that if you really have that price, you really have to stick with it and you really have to try to justify it to clients. So for example, if I sell just microgreens, right, as I do, or rather, should I then sell more exotic forms of microgreens that kind of tease people away from their current suppliers? Yes, that is something you should look at. By offering a more diverse selection, which we do, I think we carry about 8 or so varieties. By offering a diverse selection, we actually able to tailor our product to your menu. So let's say you're a place you're a steakhouse, right? The varieties I would send more would be like daikon radish, basil, broccoli, and of course your cabbage, of course, which has a little more color, right? But let's say you're an Italian restaurant, I would send more sweeter products. So I would send basil, I would send pea, I would send broccoli. Those are the items that an Italian restaurant would more look at because it fits in within their product menu.
Okay. Now, if you could start over, is there anything that you would do differently?
Yes, there will. I think I would try to see if there were pre-revenue funding opportunities first, because I spent a lot of upfront cash. But of course, these are the risks you take as an entrepreneur, you know. You can't really cry at the money you spend. You just have to take the risk and take the leap and hope and work towards it all working out, you know.
Have you been able to capitalize on some of the grants, incentives, and programs offered both in the public and private sector space?
In the private sector space, yes, through unit trust, as I mentioned. In the public sector space, not so much. One of the challenges I think I had with Ministry of Agriculture was I had a few things that I had to get in line correct first before I could qualify for the agro incentive grant.
Well, it's always something to look forward to, something to put in place.
Definitely.
And at some point in time, I think you'll be able to.
Definitely, because I mean, the grants are there, and I will say for sure, Ministry of Agriculture is pushing, they're putting a lot of money behind farmers, right? They're trying to entice people to get into it. They I benefited from it, so they should be offering it still. Free courses for people to learn. These are things that, you know, if you're interested in farming, you really should get into, because it really does allow you to build your own, reduce the age of the farmers in Trinidad. Like, Jody, do you know that the average age of a farmer in Trinidad is like 54 years old?
Yeah, I know we have a very aging population in farming, not just in Trinidad, but I think around the world that is happening.
Correct. So, like, I really have to commend some of the moves by the private and public sector to really entice people to not just get back to the ground, but also get innovative farming methods and more climate-resistant methods developed in Trinidad.
Now, you said it takes about 2 weeks to get to the stage of harvesting from planting.
Yes, correct.
How do you then balance demand and supply in this? Because it seems that it's a little bit sensitive.
Okay, well, we grow to order. So I will not try to grow an excess, unless it's, of course, for samples. So that's if I'm trying to meet new clients and connect with more people. But pretty much we grow to order. We manage everything through a pretty comprehensive Excel that tells me or tells the team when to plant, when to harvest. And yes, you are right. It is a delicate balance. It's not like you can plant 10 items and, you know, you have 10 sales. Sometimes you have to plant a little more just so you can meet a few people on the weekend or during the week, give them samples and take it from there.
This business sounds as if, for now, it is in addition to your full-time job. Do you want this to turn into something that becomes your full-time form of employment, or do you think you want to keep this as supplemental to other forms of employment?
No, I definitely want to treat farming as something long-term, something to get into full-time, because I feel a very deep connection to it because of family who are in the farming space right now. And I also feel a deep connection to it because this is something transformative. Julie, I could imagine that when you plant something, when you see something that you plant, that you grow, that you harvest, there's a sense of pride that comes from doing that act that is difficult to replicate elsewhere.
What's your age? I didn't ask you that one.
I'm 32.
When you first came up with the idea to get into this, did you receive any pushback from family or friends saying, listen, why you want to get into this?
No. A lot of people were more unaware what the item was, but when they tasted it, that's really when they got into it.
Okay. Now, like a major crop failure. And yeah. How did you learn from that?
Okay, so this actually happened a few years ago. That's actually when it happened. So when I was younger or earlier in the space, I was not very aware of how much watering can, I was aware that watering has a major impact, but I wasn't aware of the different failures that can lead to it. So there's a type of failure called damping off, right? Whereby if there's too much seeds in the tray and there's too much water, what happens is the crop fails from the root and turns into mush. By me not learning how to properly manage my watering, that led to a few costly mistakes that I had to like roll back some orders, scale back some deliveries, and really have to apologize to some customers for things not going as well as they should for like a few weeks into a month. In addition to that, I would also say seed supply was a challenge that we had. We pretty much used to do just-in-time orders for seeds, which, as you can imagine, would lead to challenges. So actually, one of the things we had was our seeds ran out, and we didn't get seeds in stock for like a next month or two, because at that time, there were delays with customs and shipping on the whole. So that led to like 2 months of no sales, no activity from the farm. So kind of learning how to manage your inventory, learn how to manage watering. Those things have been really impactful for me to really develop this business.
Now, you mentioned this as being a team. How big is this team, and then how are the roles split?
This is a 4-member team. So there is me who does the farm management, and actually five, because I oversee someone who actually does more of the laborious tasks. I mean, I help as well. Then I have someone in operations. They basically focus on making sure my inventory control is accurate, making sure accounts are reconciled, etc. And then I have 2 people in business development and marketing, respectively, that is more focused on the sales and, well, the marketing of the business itself. So those people would help me with, next week we're going to be in the... Next week, we're going to be in the Agri Expo, right? And those folks definitely helped me grow in a way that can help me market the business towards more corporate clients, get better deals, etc.
Would you say then that you're waiting for like larger customers to come on board before you make the decision to expand?
Yes and no. I mean, we expanded with a smaller customer base. And by that, I mean, we expanded by having customers who are smaller, not corporate. So like, think like restaurants, but like food service people that are pretty much smaller, but they were able to provide us with consistent sales. And that's actually one of the things that prompted us to move forward. However, to get larger contracts or larger influx of cash, you definitely need to get those corporate clients. Otherwise, you would need to get about maybe like 10 or so customers for that one corporate client.
Do you see microgreens as being something that is exportable, or do you largely see it as being something mostly for the local market?
If one was to export it, it will take some doing. It's not impossible. You would have to basically send it to, let's say I'm shipping it to Barbados, you would have to send it refrigerated and have it cleared within the same day of arrival. So it is exportable. However, if you want the freshest product, I would actually have to export the business model to Barbados and then operate from there.
In the supermarkets for the last few years, I've seen a small clamshell container with alfalfa sprouts. Are those microgreens?
No, they aren't. But as I said, the sprout and the microgreen are pretty much two halves of the same coin. So alfalfa sprouts are grown, or sprouts on the whole, like those beans, sprouts, mung beans, etc. They are grown in a jar or any kind of enclosed space, soaked in water with a bit of oxygen, not a lot of light. But it takes about 2 weeks to reach that stage, right? Microgreens are grown hydroponically, exposed to air as normal, takes about 2 weeks. So it's not microgreens per se, but it is along the same vein in terms of method.
Now, for people who are looking to get more information about the company or the products that you sell, where can they find that?
Okay, well, we can be located on Instagram and Facebook at Ibis Farms. You can also email us for any kind of concerns at ibisfarmstt@gmail.com. We are prepared to handle significant volume or small volume or just information or even samples. If anyone wants to contact us, please feel free.
Is there a contact number that they can use as well?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, Jody. It's 316-7914.
And for those who may have tuned in a little bit late, how would we then incorporate microgreens into a healthy diet?
Okay, so if I was to, just like a normal breakfast, think like if I'm having boil egg with a sandwich, you add a bit of daikon radish onto that, it adds a bit of pep to it, you know. You can use microgreens pretty much as any other leafy green. So if you're making a burger, instead of lettuce, you add some broccoli microgreens to it. If you're making a pilau and you want a bit of green to it that, you know, you're accustomed to, you have your green salad, throw microgreens in it, add a bit of taste it, add a different variety, a unique color. These are the things that microgreens can be used for. Any sort of leafy green use, microgreens right there to pretty much do the same thing.
Right. Now, you said you are at the Agri Expo. So then can people come across and meet you there, see products one-on-one, maybe even purchase other days?
Definitely, they can. We would actually have some live products on our rack as well. So people would actually be able to see how the product is grown. And I plan to also show the different phases of microgreen growth from the seeding to the actually grown stage.
For people who are hearing this and want to get into farming or agriculture, even entrepreneurship, do you have any advice that you would like to offer?
I would say research heavily what you want to do and be very, very focused and very, very, it's almost like tunnel vision. You have to know you want this. And in doing so, you'll be able to stick it through, weather the tough times, enjoy the good times.
You ever regretted getting into business?
Definitely not. I think, especially with farming, I found something I love, right? And because I was able to, it is tasking at times, but it's like a labor of love, you know? I'm in doing so, I enjoy it. I enjoy growing. I enjoy the failures. I embrace the failures. These are part of it.
Do you have any desire to go out and get into traditional farming like your grandfather used to do?
Yeah, definitely, man. I would say some of the crops that I would look at for traditional farming would be fruit trees, so think pawpaw, as well as ginger. I am pretty much fascinated with how ginger is. Ginger and maybe potatoes, some varieties of potatoes. Those crops are pretty diligent. They're hardy. They're able to really weather the storm, especially in Trinidad, where the climate, or really the world, where the climate is changing so rapidly. Connecting with the earth in a very real way is one thing that is huge on my list of things to do, man.
Well, that's actually good to hear, because a lot of people don't really want to get back into it. So to hear that there is at least an interest, hopefully not when you reach 54 years old as the average age of farmers, but it would be nice to get back into it. So one more time before we wrap up today's show of Agribusiness Innovation, please let us know your name, your company name, the products that you offer, and where they could find it.
All right. So my name is Steven. I represent Ibis Farms. You can find us on Instagram at Ibis Farms, on Facebook as well. You can email at ibisfarmstt@gmail.com. If you are a business and you want us to supply you, you can email or call us. If you are a individual and you want to find out any information on microgreens, please shoot us a message. We're happy to send you a sample.
Wonderful. So today's episode of Agribusiness Innovation, we brought this guest to tell us all about microgreens. It is something that is relatively new in the market locally, and I think we're going to gradually see more and more of it become available. Next week, I believe we have Mr. Ralph Burkoff coming on to talk to us about climate-protected agriculture. He is one of the persons in the region that is spearheading hurricane-resistant greenhouses. He's also the person responsible for the strawberry farm in Tobago, Berry Cove. We had him on the program last year. We're bringing him back on the heels of all this hurricane activity in the region, and for an update as to what exactly is happening in Tobago on that farm and some of the other projects that he has been getting into. This has been Agribusiness Innovation with me, Jody White, on Freedom Morris 6.5 FM. Be sure to tune in next week. We got all the action right here in agriculture for the region. Take care.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.